Yes, I did hear you, Nelly. Yeah. Okay. So this is the Global Education Conference. This is November 17th. It's the second day of the conference and the 301st Learning Together session episode, something we've been doing for 5 years. So when I give presentations, I try to give them, if I record them, it's a Learning Together episode. And it's also an Electronic Village Online presentation. So there are some EVO moderators here, and there's going to be discussion in the EVO Collaborate room. That's going to happen after this session. But so for right now, you can see the name of the session on the screen. And I'm Vance Stevens, and I'm in Al Ain, United Arab Emirates. This is a session on why online teacher trainers should know about MOOCs. And let's see, I've started the recording. That's for me. It's a note for me. And thank you to our sponsors and supporters. These are people who are sponsoring the Global Education Conference, one of the nicest conferences to occur online during the year. So, Emily's asking if I can mute her. Okay, I will do that. There you go. Okay, so anyway, I see that's interesting information. She can't mute herself if I've clicked her mic on. Okay, excellent to know. So anyway, to carry on with my presentation, let's see. If you want to put a little thingy where you are in the world, I'll see if I can start by putting one where I am. Uh-oh, it's not going. Oh, here we go. I have to choose. I have to choose a check or something like that. So here we are. There's a check. That's where I am in the world. Anybody else want to do that? I'll put this there. There we go. There's a yellow works better. We have with us in the chat, we have Carl Fisher. Steve Harganen is helping with the session, moderating, hosting it. Deb Black is here. Elizabeth M. from Grenoble is here. Kathy is here. Maria Diane Fabia is here. Nellie Deutsch from Toronto. And Kokan, Samer Becker, and Trika are here. So, and looks like Matthew Harris has just joined us. So welcome, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and move on. Authorization for Whiteboard. Okay, didn't give authorization for that. Let's see, which is the authorization for Whiteboard? Application sharing, whiteboard permission. Here it is. Yes, that didn't come up in the instructions. All right. So let's try it again. You have authorizations for whiteboard now. Do you want to try? There we go. The stars are all appearing. Wonderful. Thanks, Elizabeth. Wasn't aware that I had to do that. Okay. So we have somebody from, looks like Nepal or northern India. Perhaps on the Chinese border. Okay, three in America, and in Spain. Okay, I'm in the United Arab Emirates. Govinda from Nepal. Okay, thank you, Govinda. Nellie's in Vietnam. Okay. Okay, that even helps. Putting your locations in the chat is nice as well. Okay, I'm going to move on off this page, and I've just put my slides here. This is the beginning of my slideshow. So it's about why online teacher trainers should know about CMOOCs, and we're going to talk about MOOCs. And do you all know what CMOOCs are? And maybe I can tell if you put the opposite of a CMOOC. Can you put that in the text chat? What if it's not a CMOOC? What is it? Would you know? Somebody will know. I'll wait for any response in the text. XMOOC. Very good, Elizabeth. Okay, so. We're going to talk about CMOOCs and XMOOCs, and generally MOOCs. So you don't need to take notes. I probably should have told you this earlier, but you can go to slideshare.net/advanced-s, and you'll find these slides. The advantage to your going there and doing that, maybe somebody could put that URL in the text chat. Thank you very much, Kathy. Okay, so at that place, if you go there, download these slides, then all the links will work. There's a funny thing about SlideShare, the links on the first three slides don't work. So this link doesn't work. Oh, another thing you could do, too, is you could shoot that QR code, and that will take you to slideshare.net/advanced-s. Does anybody need any time to do that? If so, just put a wait in the text chat. Okay. All right. Anyway, the link is in the text chat. So you'll find my slides there. And this is the third slide, so this first link isn't live in the slide share, but everything else, all the other links are hyperlinked. So anyway, as I mentioned, I was asked to give a session on MOOCs about, because there's a discussion on MOOCs, there's a reading on MOOCs in EVO Moderator Training. EVO Moderator Training takes place in November every year, and I thought, well, gosh, why not share this kind of conversation with the Global Education Conference? It fits the theme because the people who are involved in Electronic Village Online, well, they're international. They're from everywhere, and they're from all over the globe. What it is giving is something that happens every January and February for 5 weeks. It's been going on since 2001. Some of the people here are coordinators of that session, Nellie and Elizabeth Ann, for example. And all the sessions are designed by teachers, put on by teachers. They make their proposals in, in September, I think. And basically the training takes place in November, and then we have December to get our sessions ready. And after that, January and February, there's a call for participation. And then it's free for anybody around the world to do it. It's a great event, 5 weeks, and something that Global Education Conference does in 5 days. It helps people for free. So as far as the moderator training is concerned, the training is kind of designed to make sure that the sessions that enter the call for participation will be up to the standards. And standards is, you know, it's not like we have written standards, but, you know, just that they're viable, I should say. Since we invite educators to do, actually educators can do what I like about EVO is I can do things that I can't really do in my workplace. You know, I can be really innovative. So I like that kind of thing. But the training for the moderators isn't really just to teach them something they probably already know, but it's to model how training might be conducted online. And so one such model is MOOC, and that's how it came up in the training for this week, because we're in week three now. Okay, so what's a MOOC? You probably already know, but if you're on the slides, you could explore these links if you like. The page that you see displayed there is the last link, and it kind of explains the history of MOOC, which we can have a look at in a little bit more detail. Just gonna hit the next slide. Do you know who these guys are? Anybody? Any guesses? The guy on the left, the guy on the right. Nellie knows. Nellie interviewed Brian Alexander. And Dave Cormier is the guy on the right. And, well, both of them are credited with inventing the term MOOC. And that came about because they were both involved in MOOC, the first, what came to be known as a CMOOC, the first MOOC by that name, was that name was coined as a result of their involvement in the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge MOOC that started that year. That was put on by Stephen Downs, George Siemens, and Dave, and anybody else? I can't remember all the. I think that was basically it. Jeff LeBeau was involved, and well, there's a lot of run up to it. But the thing about that MOOC was that when they put it on, before they knew it was going to be massive, they didn't know how many people they would get. So they kind of declared it. The idea was that they were doing a university course, and they just decided to make the course open to anybody, and they didn't really expect that many people, but they got thousands of participants, and that's where the concept of massive online got my wife's mobile just went off. Okay. So anyway, they didn't really know what to do about it, but they just decided they would just wing it, and that's pretty much what they did. Okay, so anyway, yes, Nellie is saying that they were both at the first ever Moodle MOOC that she organized in 2013. So for the next slide, the question is, were there MOOCs before 2008? And that's a good question. If you click on one link on this page, I would take the middle one, the one that's at the bottom of. Well, you could read that page a little bit more clearly if you click on that link. So some people say that Allison is the first MOOC. If it is a MOOC, it's actually kind of more like more like the Khan Academy, where you go, or Coursera or something like that, where you go and sign up for courses. But sometimes it's claimed that Mike Freerich was the first person to have a MOOC. Nellie mentioned in a conversation earlier, in fact she's putting stuff in the chat about it, okay, so she had participated in a MOOC by Lee Blackall in 2007, and there was a course that year also by Dave Wiley, and both of these, well, the word proto-MOOC has been used, it's appearing in the literature. Yeah, exactly, they didn't call it a MOOC because the term MOOC wasn't invented until 2008. But were there MOOCs before then? I put the EVO, Electronic Village Online, logo in the upper left-hand corner because it's arguably been a MOOC since 2001. That's when they started. So about Lee Blackall, who put that... who did the course that Nellie participated in. He wrote the Wikipedia article on networked, or he wrote a lot of the Wikipedia article on networked learning that you would see if you clicked on the middle link. And he said in a post in 2013 that he was shocked that a lot of the early history of MOOCs was being rewritten on the wikis that were on Wikipedia. But he said that one, the one on networked learning, had been left pretty much intact. So hopefully it will become it will stay as a fairly accurate history. In any event, moving on, I'll go ahead and open up the microphones. I'm going to just allow the microphones. Okay, so now if you want to use one, and I know there are a lot of talkers, there's a lot of mics, by default they left six microphones open. So if you do use a mic, if you want to say something, ask a question, make comments, Nellie is making a lot of comments here, Elizabeth Ann is making comments, so you're welcome if you want to ask any questions, make any comments at this point. Okay, I don't hear any, so I'll continue. Oh, let's see. Yep, make sure my sound is okay. All right, so, and Carl, you're welcome to make comments. This is, if you have a question there, do you use one or two MOOCs specifically or bits and pieces of numerous MOOCs? Is it difficult or even possible to take bits and pieces from more than one MOOC? I'm not sure. If you have a Yeah, if you want to say that question, go ahead, Carl. Yes, we can hear you.
No, it's Elizabeth speaking to say, actually that's two questions. Do you use one or two MOOCs specifically, or bits and pieces of numerous MOOCs? I think that's about Evo, isn't it, Carl? In which case, no, it's totally created by the participants, the Evo moderators.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we're going to talk about if we're a MOOC, what a MOOC would be. So that's coming. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, feel free to grab the mic if you want. And if you do use the microphone, please wear a headset or mute yourself when not talking.
Then
release the mic when you're
finished.
I think
that Carl's is asking a very...
Yes, go ahead, Nellie.
I think Carl's is asking a very, very good question that I hadn't thought about, because on the Evo sessions, there are lots of sessions. So would you call each session a MOOC?
Well, sessions call themselves MOOC. Like Nellie has several MOOCs. The last couple of sessions I've run, I called them the Multiliteracies MOOC and the Minecraft MOOC. Now, I joke a little bit. Sometimes I write the M with a small M, meaning it's a minuscule online course. So it's not really, I mean, to be a MOOC, a massive online course, it has to have a sustained reaction amongst the people. So that has to reach critical mass. That was the word I was looking for. So there has to be a mass of interaction that would actually allow the kind of learning that will take place in MOOCs, which we're coming to in the presentation. So, yeah. So maybe I think by definition, a MOOC is a massive open online course. It means we don't really call our sessions courses, but they are courses. So each one would be a MOOC if it's massive enough. Or minuscule, if you like to use that as your M. Okay, so does that answer that question? So we're going to talk a little bit about why, what are MOOCs? They're massive, open, online courses. Because they're courses, they have syllabuses. Massive scales, that's one nice thing about as you can see in the diagrams, it's a diagram from Stephen Downs in an Alan Levine posting. A really nice diagram because it illustrates quite well why one person communicating to many does not scale. You know, it breaks when it gets up to too many people. So the concept that they started, he and George Siemens and Dave Cormier started in 2008, is something that deliberately aggregated the content of the people in the mix. So that scales. So you can actually run a course if the teacher does not have to be, if one person does not have to interact with each of the others, it scales. And it makes use of abundancy versus scarcity. So when you have one person managing anything, there is by definition scarcity. But abundance is where everything is assumed to be available. You can connect as you like and draw from the abundance of what's in the environment. So that's also something that needs to scale. So that's an advantage of MOOCs is that it allows you to access the abundance of information that's in your network, for example. Okay. The definition of open is debatable. Yes, indeed. That's the thing. There's actually a good slide a good thing that I should have used. It was MOOC, and each element is debatable. So it, so that's true. Okay. So anyway, another thing that MOOCs have in common is that the first MOOCs were definitely connectivist. That is, the ones that people started in the early days were connectivist, meaning that connectivism is a learning theory for the digital age, which means that it takes advantage of the things that we just mentioned, the ability to interact, network with one another. In the conclusion of George's article, he starts, the pipe is more important than the content within the pipe. So in other words, the content is not the critical thing, it's the connections that you make that allow you to get at the information that's in the network, to get at the knowledge that's in the network, actually. There's a big difference between knowledge and information. There's a lot of debate over all these topics, actually. Does anybody want to comment?
Hello, everyone. Being a daughter of the MOOCs myself, I strongly agree with this, because especially today, when we are learning things that we don't know when we're going to need, I am very much in favor of this type of books, because you never know when you're going to use this thing, and sometimes the things that someone is talking today here is not applicable, but it will be eventually, or maybe not, but you get to know people and inspire, and well, that's what I take about this.
Yeah. Hi, Maria. Maria is a person who is active in Hello Little World. Actually, she was my co-presenter at the last GEC conference, I think. We talked about the kind of learning that's possible in these online environments. So nice to see you here. Okay, so anyway, double click there. How MOOCs work is difficult to understand because it's ineffable. You really have to experience MOOC in order to know how it works. And the page I have up here is the Rhizomatic Learning MOOC that was run by Dave Cormier recently, 2014. And he's been writing a lot, actually, since 2008 or something like that about the, I don't know how far it goes back, but some of the seminal articles on community as curriculum come from there. And the community as curriculum means that the community creates the curriculum. The community in that network starts steering it, whatever plan you have for your course. If you have enough people, it's going to probably go off in different directions, and which is a good thing, because people, the thing that what MOOCs services is people who want to learn and don't want, you know, it's Jay Cross used to say that, he probably got it from somewhere, he said, it's in his informal learning book, but there's a chapter called People Love to Learn, but They Hate to Be Taught. And so MOOCs are for people who want to learn, and therefore, if you want to learn something, you'll steer where the you'll get other people to help you to learn. So that's how they work. And a little way, an example of that is as a participant, for example, if you join one of the Siemens, George Siemens, Stephen Downs MOOCs, you would be asked to enroll your blog in the MOOC. Or if you don't have a script that will handle this, you could just ask people to blog. And then they can tag relevant posts with the MOOC tag in their blog posts. And then you can use Tagboard, for example, to find where those, who's been, well, actually with Tagboard, you'd probably have to get people to tweet that they had tagged something or to write it down in Facebook or is it going to Facebook? I'm not sure. Anyway, it aggregates content, tag content from several sources. Or Stephen Downs has a script that goes into the blogs that people have identified as their blogs for the course, and then he finds posts that are tagged with the MOOC tag, and he aggregates them, and his script displays them in a daily newspaper format. So every day, people can see kind of a Pagely display. Pagely will do that in a way as well. Sometimes it does work. So the participants then interact with each other by commenting on each other's posts. So that's a little bit different from, you know, that one instructor interacting with the students model, you know, that we saw in one of the earlier slides. Have you interacted yourselves in MOOCs like this? Have you experienced this kind of thing where you've, because I don't know if people in this chat have been in CMOOCs or XMOOCs or just finding out about MOOCs. Anybody wants to make a comment? Was this common to any MOOC experience that you had?
It was a little bit, no. So, only the mini MOOC I have with you. I have tried twice to join CMOOCs and I really didn't get very far. But I did join an XMOOC on pronunciation by Lancaster University, which was absolutely brilliant with a lot of moderators. That's my experience.
Okay. I don't tend to get very far in CMOOCs either because I just go and learn whatever I have time to learn. If you want to learn something, like a scripting language, like about pronunciation, a skill, then an XMOOC is the obvious choice because you will learn that skill. Any other experiences? Yes, Kathy's asking me to continue my slide presentation because she wants to know more about XMOOCs. Okay. Okay, yes. Maria is saying that C is for connective MOOCs, and XMOOC actually comes from edX. We'll go on. We'll carry on. I'll get to a couple of other things. Dave Cormier has a some steps in coping with MOOCs. If you get into one of these MOOCs where, like Elizabeth and I both are having, you never know where you are in this MOOC. It's really chaotic, which is very nice because learning should be chaotic. You have to resolve chaos in order to learn, if you really want to learn. If you want to go up in the upper echelons of Bloom's taxonomy, you've got to be dealing with chaos. Orient, declare, network, cluster, and focus. So there are 5 weeks in a EBO session, and generally I pattern my, one reason I call my sessions MOOCs is because I really plan to do them in this manner. The first week is for orientation. The second week we start finding out who each other is and why they're there. Then we network, and what that usually means is we kind of try to go out into the wider network somewhere. For example, with Minecraft MOOC, we joined a Canvas course in Minecraft last year. There are so many ways you can find people to network with, or just network the people, participants in the course should be networking. And then what normally happens if the group is really massive, then it's impossible for everybody to network together, so people with like interests will cluster. And then those people, you might actually, one of the big takeaways in a MOOC is the network, of course. So you're getting the pipes, not necessarily content within the pipes. You're getting content through the pipes, but MOOCs help you develop your pipes so that you find people to cluster with, and then keeping those pipes going after the MOOC, that's where you start to focus and you'll start developing projects, collaborations, etc. Okay, so if I'm missing something in the text chat, please feel free to grab a mic and just ask a question, make a comment. We're more than half through the slides. I like to have discussions. In fact, after this, the EVO moderators have the option of breaking away into another space to continue the discussion. Okay, so going on, talking about MOOCs in general now, flipped learning is characteristic of MOOCs, both CMOOCs and XMOOCs. So far we've talked about CMOOCs. There is a Wikipedia post on Flipped Classroom which says or attributes to Salman Khan the first flipped learning on a massive scale. So it's kind of a famous story that he wanted to teach one of his relatives something, so he started a math or physics or something like that, and so he started making videos to help him understand the concepts, and this got incorporated into his Khan Academy courses. So CMOOCs and XMOOCs both do this, but we're going to talk in a minute about the very significant differences between the two. So here's a slide showing, I don't know if you know who's in this first picture. Would you happen to know either of these guys? The two guys in the picture? Okay, the guy on the left is named Sebastian Thrun, and Torvald is his collaborator. Anyway, we're going to get their names in a minute. If you click on the link to the Wikipedia article, you can read where it says it, what I've just said about flipped learning. So that's informal flipped learning, what you might do in your EVO session or might make to help your students in classroom is one kind of flipped learning. Another kind has big studio backing behind it, and we'll talk a little bit more about the XMOOC that Thrun and Torvald, okay, anyway, we're going to talk about them in a minute. Peter Norvig, that's it. So for a lot of people who, the Norvig and Torvald, the Thrun and Norvig model is one that many people associate with MOOCs. And Sebastian Thrun went off to start Udacity from his experience in Stanford putting on this big, massive MOOC in artificial intelligence. And then edX eventually appeared, and George Siemens made a little post, which you can click on his link there, about he gave these kinds of MOOCs the names XMOOCs. And we'll look a few slides from now a little bit more about those two. Okay, so Thrun and Norvig, the MOOC that they did in artificial intelligence was really a quantum leap from the CMOOCs that had been run earlier with thousands of participants. This one, I don't know how many it had. Maybe it says in that article there, but it had multiple thousands of participants, and it also had Amazon had developed an algorithm which would mark the participants' tests. That is, they were assessed at certain stages in the artificial intelligence course, and they were actually able to award credit for the course if done carefully. And it really was on a massive scale. And it got a lot of attention when it was, it first came out. It really took MOOC up a notch. So, and Sebastian Thrun quit his job at Stanford, his tenured position, and he went to work for Google, actually. And then from there, he started his own company called Udacity. And so Coursera is another of these kinds of MOOCs, a place where you can go and you can find things that you want to learn. It's very useful, really. George Siemens said that if he were to start a course, he was talking to some graduate students in South America somewhere. He said he told them a little about his teaching theories, and then he said if he were going to start a course as a professor, he would, instead of spending a lot of time preparing materials for it, he would find the Coursera counterpart to that and have his students go enroll in Coursera because the materials were so good. And then in his class, he would deal with the interaction, the connectivist. He would put people together in ways that they would then synthesize, perhaps produce things, but he would spend time doing that, and they would get the course itself from Coursera. So nothing, no problem with mixing C's and X's here. But this post is one that somebody posted and said he was confused because he got into an XMOOC and was expecting a CMOOC. And he said that, he made a little joke here, he said that before MOOC was pronounceable, now it looks like it's getting unpronounceable now. So he was trying to reconcile the CMOOCs and the XMOOCs. So, and by the way, of course, if you just joined us, you can go to slideshare.net /Vances. Maybe someone could put that link back there again. You can get these slides, so if you want to click on a link, like the one, the degree of freedom at the bottom of the page, you can click on that link and you can follow as we're going along in your own browser in greater depth. And of course, you can download the slideshow. It's there at slideshare.net/Vances. So I mentioned the post that George Siemens prepared called XMOOC, and he said, our MOOC model emphasizes creation, creativity, autonomy, and social network learning. The Coursera model emphasizes a more traditional learning approach through video presentations and short quizzes and testing. Put another way, CMOOCs focus on knowledge creation and generation, whereas XMOOCs focus on knowledge duplication. So I wonder if that goes with what Elizabeth experienced, or if you have any comments about that.
Obviously, I do, Elizabeth, again, because that's absolutely exactly the case. And there seems that in Bates' article, he says that there are less personal interaction in the CMOOC. So the XMOOC, and the XMOOC I joined had actually an enormous amount of moderators. The university took on all the graduate students as moderators, so there was quite a lot of personal interaction, but it was definitely a transmission of knowledge all the way with a clear program.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you know, I don't reach any really conclusions in this presentation, but what anybody would try to do in designing an EBO session or an online course would be to try to say, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to, and if you want to teach something specifically, you want people to come away with something that can be tested at the end of it, then really you can do it mechanically. You could create exercises that go online and they answer questions, and or you could do it the way that it was just suggested. If you happen to have a lot of graduate students who are, you know, I don't know how that sustains itself, but anyway, that's a really nice way to do it. The idea is that you need to have the human element. That's so important. That's another thing we learn in Electronic Village Online, that you have to interact, respond to you have to be there with the participants. That's one reason it's nice to have a lot of moderators in your session. Okay, any other comments?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I remember once signing up for a course where I thought it was a CMOOC or an XMOOC, and it ended up being quite a CMOOC as well, in the sense that they made us create things, and people commented on each other's work. So sometimes they mix, right? Yeah. And it's also okay.
Yeah. Could be a six book, a CX book or something like that. C-X maybe, or CMOOC X. Yeah, so there's so many ways you can describe these. And then Nina Liakos has just joined us. Says that her books that she's used in Coursera are pretty unit directional, although there are participant fora for those who want to participate. So, yeah. So there's various things you can do, depending on your imagination, for making your session or your course interactive with the participants on a personal level, or if you want them to jump through certain hoops and make sure they've jumped. You know, that's depends on the goals of your course. One thing I like about EVO is that where I teach, and it's probably the same for a lot of you, where I teach, someone else tells me what to do, and I have to construct the course by creating a lot of hoops for students to jump through and then testing them and make sure they've jumped. So I really like being able to experiment in EVO with these other ways of constructing courses and ways that I like to learn. I can give people the experience that I like personally, and people who like my courses must feel the same. And some people don't like it and drop out, you know. So People learn in different ways. Some people need more structure, and some people like to be able to roam free in the jungle. Okay, so anyway, moving on. The question is EVO a MOOC? Is it a CMOOC, an XMOOC, a CXMOOC? So often I find myself considering that EVO might have been a MOOC. Carl asked earlier if that was just its courses were MOOCs, possibly, or is the whole thing a MOOC? That's actually something that if we wrote a blog post about it, would probably be commented on by, you know, people with all kinds of different directions, because these people who write about these, who examine these, get really detailed, and there's some references at the end of my presentation which you can use to follow if you want. But EVO is in its 15th year. Could it be a MOOC? Let's see, it's got a set of courses. It's courses conducted entirely online. Okay, this is the OC is there. Permanent artifacts are made available. Now, Nellie brought up the question of open. For open, it really needs to be, well, free, of course, but also on open access. So that means that to really be open, you have to be able to get the artifact. You have to be able to get the course, get the thing that you're looking for, just by going to a URL. There's no gatekeepers, passwords. I don't know, that's debatable. But open access means, to me, that anybody can reach it. You don't really have to be a member of the course, in my view. You should be able to, like in the MOOCs that Siemens and Downs started in 2008, they had some people who were actually physically present taking the course, and they treated them differently than they did the people in the crowd. But everything they created for them was available online. Now, MIT is a famous example of a university that puts its materials online. I've seen other examples. This is not unusual anymore. You know, there's people who go to universities these days can go in advance to online and find all the course materials. They're all there. So the course itself is not secret. There's nothing, you know, it's the interaction around the course that's the important thing. Any comments about that? So it's not an unusual model. It's being done, actually, that the course materials themselves are often on open access. And, well, the other part, the M part of the MOOC, is how many participants do you have in the mix? And, of course, the participants in any particular EVO set of sessions, they're not necessarily going to interact all together. What about the EVO moderator training? Maybe that's kind of a MOOC. It's got plenty of people. They all interact. We have spaces for them to interact. Google Plus is a really nice community where people are interacting all the time. So, it's where the clustering, in a way, takes place, that you know you've reached a critical mass, where people start taking the course, acting the community as curriculum kicks in, and the course starts taking its own direction. So, yeah, as Nina says, EVO sessions can be very small. That's true. That's why sometimes I make the M in MOOC lowercase, so I call it a minuscule open online course. That's my little joke, in a way. Okay, Nina, you're welcome to grab a mic if you want. We've got the mics open. Just click on the talk button. You can comment if you like. You can laugh.
I just want to see if I want to see if it works. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Huh?
Oh, amazing. I'm doing this on my phone because
okay,
so
anyway,
I can't get in on my laptop.
Oh, cool.
So this is my first experience
Collaborate
with the phone, and it's different, but apparently it works.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. All right, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, that's great. If you want to comment, just go ahead and grab your phone and speak into it. Okay, so anyway, I'm down toward the end of my slides, so I'll just finish up. So here's my conclusion, kind of a conclusion. Maybe EVO is a MOOC. But the reason we ask ourselves this is not to determine whether EVO is a CMOOC or an XMOOC, but it's to consider the framework of MOOCs and CMOOCs and XMOOCs and see where do you want to fit in. So these are the affordances that I think, the affordances of MOOCs that sort of resonate with what happens in EVO sessions. There's a lot of use of social media. There is a lot of participant-driven content. I think that really happens, especially because there's a lot of interchange between the, nobody really is in charge. I mean, even the coordinators of EVO are always negotiating, you know, how we're supposed to do it. Nobody lays it all down. It's all collaborative. There's distributed communication, no formal assessment. And these, by the way, are some of the affordances of MOOCs, of CMOOCs that were mentioned in Bates. It's an article that the EVO moderators were supposed to read this year in the first week. So any comments on that?
I'd like to comment about the participant-driven content. I think that varies by EVO session. And I think recently we've been getting more proposals that look more like courses with a lot of content generated by the moderators. Maybe we've been encouraging that and telling people what to do with their syllabus. But I think that there is wide variation.
Oh, yeah. Taking multiliteracies, which I sort of developed over several years, I kept adding content, but more and more people stopped looking at that as being what they had to do in the course. In fact, they probably got confused by it because there was a lot of content there that was just, it's just kind of like a library. Let's walk into the library and see what we can learn here. That's not exactly correct. This is a curated set of materials that I had there. And when I first ran the course, I sort of said, okay, we're going to try to learn about this, then we're going to learn about this. I used one book as, in fact, Stuart Selber's book on multiliteracies. But so going from that, I was kind of trying to teach around the concepts that he introduced in the book, his breakdown of what multiliteracies was. But as I found that the people who, we're really learning more about what we get from webheads, for example, which might lose a few people here, but it's that session, that EVO session in 2002 was really, the content was the tools for people to come together, or becoming a webheads, another session that went on for about 10 years after that. There was a lot of content, but people are really using the content as tools, and I think the learning was taking place. Not the tools were ancillary to the learning that was taking place. People are learning about the tools, but they're really learning how to connect. They're learning how to learn and, you know, how to leverage their learning on their network. So I think that's a lot of what EVO does. Some participants might go into a course. Let's say I wanted to take a course by Shelley Terrell on ebooks, because I really like the people who are running the course. I would like to learn from Shelley. She's quite a person who's really capable of teaching, or sitting in an environment where you can learn. So I might not follow the course exactly the way it's prescribed, but I just go and learn things that I can pick up in that course. Maybe Minecraft book is certainly the same way. You just come down and play Minecraft and you learn what you can.
I think that multiliteracies...
You learn what you want to learn.
Multiliteracies was an example of an EVO session that emphasized participant-driven content, maybe more than any other, Elizabeth Ann, she mentored and so was closely watching the pronunciation, teaching pronunciation differently in 2015. Elizabeth, would you say that there was much participant-driven content in that one? I would guess not.
No, I have reservations at the beginning about them totally. But I just put in the chat box. Are we going to continue the discussion about Evo here, or
I don't think it's a problem.
That's not a problem.
Well,
I'm
actually,
talking about the,
there is another consideration, and that is we have just 9 minutes left in this session. We have to stop. And so there will be a continuation of the Evo in another Blackboard Collaborate room. That is a continuation of this discussion. You're welcome to join us. I'm sure there's a GEC session going on after this as well. But, of course, you can do as you like. But maybe somebody could put the information on how to move over to the breakout room in a few minutes in the chat, the address of the Blackboard Collaborate over there. And I'm watching it right now. At the moment, there's nobody there, although some people have popped in, Elizabeth Hanson-Smith, for example. She's not there right now. But in any event, let me just show you the rest of the slides. I think we're... Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nina, go ahead.
I just wanted to say Elizabeth Hanson-Smith is here.
Oh, wonderful.
Hi,
okay.
I just wanted to say that in order for this to generate an archive, I need, when this finishes, I need everyone to leave the room. But someone probably should paste the link of the next session in the chat so that they, before you leave, you are automatically redirected to the room where you will continue the conversation.
Yes, that's what I was asking someone to do for the one that's going to talk about MOOCs for the EVO moderators. And anybody is welcome to join there. Elizabeth Ann has just put that there. As far as the thank you. As far as the next GEC session is concerned, I'm not sure you get that from the schedule. And I think all the participants know how to do that. So anyway, just to conclude, EVO is about networking and communities of practice, in my opinion. And the sessions definitely build content, not only from a set syllabus, but from discussion and creativity, I think, of the people who are there. A lot people bring a lot into the courses and help each other to learn. And they get all these people are coming from all over the globe, all levels of expertise, so you really learn from the people in the mix. So for that reason, I think that CMOOC is worth having a look at and possibly informing some courses, but then it's not something that every course would like to do. So let me just hit the next couple of slides because there's a bibliography here, which if you go to slideshare.net/mansist, you can find these links for extra readings on the subject matter, some of the things I've mentioned in the course, some things I've written at the last couple of links, and all those links are active in slideshare.net/mansist. Stephen Downs is incredibly prolific about MOOCs, so he has an e-book. The last link is an e-book that you can go and get more than you'll ever want to read. He was keeping track very seriously about posts about MOOCs. So he had about 500 of them when he stopped doing that maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago or something like that. So there's quite a lot of information. If you really want to know more about MOOCs, go have a look in there. And if you this is one of my more popular slideshows, Chaos in Learning, Resolving that Chaos Through Networking. So if you want to learn a little bit more about that, you can hit that slideshow. And there's also Learning Together. This is Learning Together episode 301, 17th of November, 2015. And also a session in the Global Education Conference, and also an EVO moderator training session. So just mix all kinds of things together, just like you can mix MOOCs. So if you want to join us, though, every week we do something like this. So if you hit these links and these slides, you can find out where a lot of the people here hang out weekly, usually on a Sunday. And finally, thank you very much. And there's just some more links about who I am, my email address. And again, you can have that if you download the slides at, or just go find them online, slideshare.net/advanced-s. So, well, we have 5 minutes, so if anybody has anything more to say, we can. The way I usually do this is I leave the mic open as long as it's being used and stop the recording when it's not. And then, but welcome to hear from you. Any reactions? Maria, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that Kurt Bonk has a new book out on MOOCs that anyone might find interesting. I have it. I think you can also download it. He's got a lot of free things.
He does. You can go to trainingshare.net, trainingshare.net, I think, or Google Kurt Bonk TrainingShare, and you'll find he's just got masses of stuff. All his presentations are online. He's one of the most open people. Talk about open. He's done learning together sessions with us in our first WebEds in Action Online Convergence. He did 2 free presentations. Top of his game educator. He can give a presentation. On one Learning Together session, he came on and sort of talked to us for an hour, and then we said, well, okay, thanks, Kurt. And he said, well, don't you want to hear my presentation? He spent another hour with us going through his presentation. He's that kind of guy. Okay, well, anybody else?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Vance and the Webhead crowd, for doing so much for the learning of others who can't physically be together but virtually feel so much close. And this is priceless. I can't thank you enough for doing whatever the things you do. It's just amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, and we have to make sure we give credit to the Global Education Conference and the, this is the people who also help Learning Revolution, Steve Hargadon's, one of his umbrella groups. Classroom 2.0 is another one, so if you can Google those, Learning Revolution Classroom 2.0, or you can find all the links on the Ning. There's quite a lot going on besides the Global Education Conference, and all of it's free. People are welcome to participate. Classroom 2.0 has sessions. That's Peggy George and her collaborators. She often comes to our Learning Together events. And she put us in touch with Lucy Gray a couple of weeks back, and Lucy told us about the Global Collaboration Conference, which she was running at the time. So it was really an interesting discussion. So all of these communities come together, hang together, and you're certainly welcome to join us and come back again. So hope to see you in the future. I guess I'm going to have to stop the recording. We're coming up upon the next to last of the hour. 6:59 is the timestamp in the text chat. So thanks a lot, Pat Stevens from Aline UAE, signing out. Learning Together, Global Education Conference, and from the EVO moderators. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Vance. Bye.
Bye. Oh, thanks, Elizabeth. Nice to hear your voice. Bye-bye. And you're on the recording. I'm about to turn it off. Nice to hear from you. Maybe we'll see you over in the next chat. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Yes, Elizabeth is coming. That's wonderful. Thanks again, Vance.
Okay. Bye, Elizabeth.